Welcome back to the program. This is the Paranormal 360. I'm Dave Schrader. And in hour two, we continue our journey into the unexplainable with Stanley Milford Jr., the Navajo Ranger who spent over two decades confronting the paranormal head on. From skinwalkers and UFOs to Bigfoot and hauntings, his investigations reveal a world where the supernatural isn't just legend, it's part of his job. His new book, The Paranormal Ranger, peels back the curtain on these chilling cases, blending a law enforcement perspective with rich traditions of Navajo and Cherokee heritage. The strange and the shadowy await, my friends. Joining me now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Stanley Milford Jr. All right, Stanley, let's start discussing some of these cases that you've investigated. And having kind of a background from youth on about what these beings are, what these kind of experiences are really like, did that prepare you for this when you became a Navajo Ranger, or do you still find yourself challenged and frightened or unnerved by the type of activity that you're witnessing?
Well, one of the things is that as a child, I had a very strong spiritual connection, I felt, with my creator, and at a very early age. So as a child growing up in Northeast Oklahoma, heavily wooded, forested area, at times I would disappear playing in the woods, and I never really felt that fear of being out there after dark or these kind of things. And I think that carried on through into young adulthood and adulthood. Having worked as a SWAT team commander and operator, you know, there was times you were being shot at, and you had to stay focused on what it is that your mission was, and really put that in the hands of your creator as far as your safety, and just rely on your training that you hope will carry you through from, you know, into safety after the mission is completed. But that kind of mentality, I think, and mindset was what was adapted into dealing with the paranormal. Jonathan Dover and I, we didn't volunteer to do these investigations. There was a case where an elderly grandmother who was residing up in the high elevation mountain area during the summertime. The Navajos traditionally will herd their livestock up into the mountain areas simply during the summertime because it's a lot cooler. It's a lot greener. You have a lot of clearer running spring water. And she had her livestock up in the mountains, and she called the department reporting seeing one of these things that people call Bigfoot or Sasquatch, that one of these things had stepped over into her sheep corral, picked up one of her sheep, and took off with it. And so she called the department. There were two young rangers that were assigned to respond. Unfortunately, one of those younger rangers was like what I would refer to as a comedian, because everything is a joke or laughing and carrying on, and this is just this guy's personality. That's how he is. But I think the grandmother witnessing this while these two younger rangers were up there to investigate that offended her, you know, thinking that, you know, he's not taking this seriously. And she contacted the chief back with the department, explained the situation, and the chief called a department-wide meeting, and he said, you know, he said, you've chosen a career to do one of two things, if not a combination of both, and that's to help people and or to protect people. And you've sworn an oath to do that, and you will do that. He said, that's what we're here to do, is help. And at the time, he looks over to me and John, and he says, we were sitting nearby, and he says, and you two are going to oversee these cases that people refer to as paranormal.
Sure. So
for John and I, it was like, yes, sir, which, you know, as a part of the special projects and running SWAT and dignitary protection and all of these other special assignments, that's what we, our response would be, yes, sir, and we'd give 110% to whatever that assignment was. It wasn't that we were raising our hands and wanting to be, you know, the Navo X-Files or that kind of thing. That wasn't the case. We were simply assigned, and that's what we did for. And I continued on even after John retired in 2011. I continued to work up into 2020, 2021, something like that, till I retired from the Rangers Department. And I continued to investigate those paranormal cases.
Now, when you're law enforcement, obviously you're trained in logic and in deductive right. and reasoning, being pragmatic, going in and looking at the possible.
Right.
But yet you're living in a world where the impossible is happening every day. How hard is it to rectify and get out of cop mind and into a broader expanse to deal with these cases and try to bring peace to people?
You know, John and I, our police career, we were trained at the Federal Police Academy, the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, or FLETC, with your investigative techniques and procedures to collect evidence and to conduct interviews and everything that comes along with that, documenting evidence to compile into a report. So you are trained to be skeptical from the word go. But John and I, when we were first assigned these kind of cases, we began reaching out to organizations like the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, which had chapters within the state of Arizona and Phoenix, Arizona. And we reached out to the BAS team with Robert Bigelow, who was had organizations out of Las Vegas, Nevada. And so they had investigators that conducted these kind of investigations, like with UFOs and things. And we wanted to see how it was they approached these cases, how they collected some of the evidence and things of that nature, and assimilate or adapt that ability and that procedure in the investigations we were doing, because we were kind of out of our league and out of our norm, you know, in dealing with this stuff.
When you would do a case and have to turn in the paperwork, was your commander rolling his eyes at the absurdity of some of these claims, or was this, again, just part of the job?
Well, the unique thing with the forming of this unit to investigate these kind of cases. So I grew up between two worlds. I grew up, you know, predominantly in growing up in Oklahoma, where I was going to public school and learning the curriculum from the state there, you know, learning the sciences and the biology and all of these things, mathematics. And John was the same in that he was born in Los Angeles, but his great grandparents were Navajo, and his grandfather was a medicine man. And he too would spend time between Los Angeles and the Navajo Reservation. The chief was born on the reservation and very traditional as a young boy, but he was also taken from the Navajo Reservation and raised in school in the Mormon culture up near Salt Lake City, the Mormon church. So the three of us had that perspective of seeing the Anglo or Western side of things, and then also, on the other hand, the traditional Navajo belief system and spirituality. And so the three of us, that was unique. And that's what allowed, I think, this formation of this investigative unit. Because the average Navajo, because of taboos, if you were born and raised on the Navajo reservation, you're raised not, there's certain things like death that you have nothing to do with that. That's for the medicine men to have to deal with, you know, spirits and witchcraft and all that stuff. That's taboo. You stay away from that, and they will avoid that. The average Navajo will.
And that opens up an interesting element of our conversation. Yeah. We'll complete. We have to take another quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about that. How does somebody who's trained in law enforcement, who's used to, you know, you can pull your gun on a bad guy that's violent and doing something. You can drag somebody out of a location that may pose a danger or a threat. How do you bring peace to the people on site when it's a supernatural claim? And I do want to get into the burial mounds and the hauntings that are known to take place around the entire United States that seem to be centered around these former burial grounds that have been upset and turned over. We'll talk about that and more right here. Stanley Milford Jr., our guest on News Talk 830 WCCO. We're back. The Paranormal Ranger, my guest right here on The Paranormal 360. We are your home for all things strange and supernatural every Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Stanley Milford Jr. is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker hotline. Before the break, I kind of positioned the point when you're law enforcement, you're used to dealing with criminals, you're used to dealing with situations. How do you bring peace to a family when you're called in and it turns out that what they're dealing with is a Bigfoot or a ghost or something that isn't as easy to wrap your hands around and drag out?
Well, one of the things that we found quite common is the fact that the people that were experiencing these things were almost always traumatized or in some kind of state of shock after experiencing these things. And a lot of times it was simply responding and being there for that family or for that individual and letting them know that their concern was a concern of ours and we were there to try to help them and in some way try to protect them from what was happening. So, yeah, I mean, it was a challenge.
Right, because people, I mean, again, you have to realize, folks, that yeah, you're tuning in. It's not something that you can go up in the attic, right, find the ghost, put handcuffs on him and drag him out, right, and the family's exactly safe. It's bringing them some, you know, understanding. Would you help enlighten them or educate them to a way to deal with the spirits or the creatures that were attacking their livestock?
Well, you know, there was a number of cases that involved minors that were involving children and or teenagers. I know there was a case where I had two young girls, one was 10 and one was 11 years old. They would get off the school bus and at the highway and have to walk almost a mile back home. And they would be doing this each and every day. And on this one occurrence, they get off the school bus and they're followed and or chased by one of these things that people refer to as Bigfoot. And they were traumatized. When they got home, their uncle was there and he couldn't even get out of them what had transpired. It took a while before he could get them to talk about what they seen and what they experienced. They were so hysterical. And he later, after this, went out and he witnessed this thing that they had encountered. So a lot of times it's talking with those individuals, calming them and letting them know that in my experiences and in my investigations, there was nobody that was physically harmed or injured by these things. So a lot of times it was just a matter of taking the time to listen to these victims' experiences and really listening to what their concern is.
You know, I got to travel a lot in the East Coast while filming the TV series, the Holzer Files. And many of the cases that we came upon, it turned out that the land we were on was former Lenni Lenape land or indigenous people's land. And there were a lot of unsettling hauntings that were taking place. And then as we dug deeper and found the history, the tragedies, the murders, the death, the things that took place or the mounds where your people had buried one another and was a sacred land had been removed. Is it really the spirits of the ancestors that are still there that are lashing out, or is there something more eternal, something more elemental to whatever this energy is that seems to be coming up when these areas are disturbed?
When you consider that you have people like Albert Einstein who continuously reiterated that energy doesn't, you know, it don't just evaporate. It don't just disappear into thin air, that it can only change from one form into another form. And if you consider that all human beings, every person that's born into this world has a life force, has a life energy or soul, that's a lot of spirit, that have occupied this little blue marble that you and I walk on each and every day. And really, no matter where you would go on this planet, you're walking on the remains of other people's. It's just a fact. And yes, we come along and we build our modern skyscrapers and buildings and homes and malls, but underneath those lands were other civilizations of peoples that were human beings, like you and I.
So you don't believe necessarily that those that the spirits that are what we once were doesn't elevate and go to someplace else? It's staying with our remains?
I think it does. I think just like the coins. The coins were coming into our physical world from some other existence, some other plane. They were and do. But I think the spirits of former human beings, I think when a person transcends this planet and leaves this world, their spirit goes somewhere else. And typically, but at times, those spirits can cross over into our physical world and can move things and make things happen. They can make voices, you know, they can actually vocalize things and a lot of different things. But I think a lot of these things are existing from some other plane of existence, some, you know, through vortexes and gates and you have places like Sedona, Arizona, that's a hot spot, considered a hot spot. You have places like Vernal, Utah or Skinwalker Ranch that's considered a hot spot. But I think these exist throughout the world. And really, I think that these things can be manipulated. And I mean, you look at what people refer to as a Ouija board or a talking board. A person can manipulate that kind of thing and open a gateway to some other plane of existence. And entities can come across back and forth through those things. So really, it can happen anywhere. So,
yeah, it's always been a curious element to my understanding is, you know, I would like to think that we do go somewhere, and it breaks my heart, the tragedy that takes place on our planet and within our history. But then to realize that if we're upsetting, you know, maybe sometimes knowingly, sometimes unknowingly, old burial grounds that are sacred and important, you know, gosh, it breaks my heart to think that maybe part of who we are still remains there, watching over these areas.
John and I, you know, as a part of our job, we would at times when erosion would occur in certain places, human remains would be exposed from other time periods.
Right.
And John and I would be the one that would have to go in and rebury those human remains and relocate in an extreme situation, relocate those because of the erosion. But if you can consider that, you know, John and I were trained by medicine men to be how to approach working in those burial areas and the ruined sites and things of that nature. That was where we worked. So as long as we remained respectful and reverent in these sacred areas, we didn't really have any problems going into those areas. But there are those who trespass into those areas, who are very disrespectful and damage things, and it would be no different than if you or I were to walk into Gettysburg and dig up, you know, remains and be disrespectful and that kind of thing, and or even Arlington Cemetery. And I think there would be repercussions for doing that kind of behavior in those areas. So
Stanley Milford Jr., our guest. Again, the book is called The Paranormal Ranger, A Navajo Investigator's Search for the Unexplained. It's out and available now. Remember, don't just pick up the book and read it. Rate and review it after you've read it, because your ratings and reviews on different book sites go a long way to help these authors, researchers, and investigators get their work seen by a bigger, broader populace. I've received a few emails that I think will be very fascinating and interesting to talk to you about when we come back, but I also want to be very cautious with the way that we discuss this, and we'll do that when we return. Stanley Milford Jr., our guest here on the Paranormal 360. We're back. This is the Paranormal 360. I'm Dave Schrader, former Navajo Ranger. Stanley Milford Jr., my guest this evening. His book, The Paranormal Ranger, is out and available. We have a link for it on today's program guide. I received a few emails during the show pointing me at something, and had never really thought of it in this same perspective you and I are speaking, but I thought it might be worth touching base with. And certainly, I know I don't want to throw you a curveball too wildly here, but there seems to be an extraordinary amount of Indigenous women that go missing and or are found dead. Do you believe that there is any element of the supernatural that's involved in these cases, or is it simply just people doing these crimes?
Well, there is a disproportionate number of women on the Navajo and other Indian tribal nations that end up missing each and every year. You know, but to infer that there is something of a paranormal nature that is leading to that,
I understand, and I know it's a very sensitive issue.
But you can go to any local Walmart and you can see the number of missing people each year that are there, and it's not just the Indian tribal nations.
Right.
It's globally people go missing. But when you have things like the human trafficking situations that are there, there may be a more non-supernatural supernatural explanation for some of that.
I just know the traditional belief for most cultures, right, is if you're focused on things like the supernatural, if you're focused on this, it might make you more susceptible or open. And it seems that the Indigenous peoples and tribes are a lot more accepting. That's why I said I know it was a very fragile discussion, but I wanted to at least address that to see.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is plausible. It is plausible. Definitely. And I'm glad somebody did bring that up, because it is something, you know, I have friends like Dave Pilates, who has written the series Missing 411. And John, he's a good friend of John and I. And with the investigations he's done and in our discussions, there is it is plausible that there, in some of these, there is some sort of paranormal crossing with these kind of things, and it could point to something of that nature. It would just take more investigation and more in-depth research into that subject, but definitely plausible. I thank you for that comment.
Folks, look up and do some research, because it is startling. The Missing and Murdered Indigenous People Crisis. You can find information about that online. Read more about it. Educate yourself. There is, as Stanley brought up, a disproportionate amount that is taking place. And, you know, it should be people should be aware. There should be something that's done to help crack down and bring some peace. I want to go back into your investigations, because obviously that's something people are fascinated in hearing your firsthand accounts. What, if any, would you say about extraterrestrials? Do you believe that they are truly coming from other parts of our universe, or are they multidimensional layers that are just part of our planet already? And have you seen one?
John and I were working one time to assist the Navajo Police and the National Park Service. So on the northern boundary of the reservation is what is known as the San Juan River, which flows and connects to the Lake Powell Lake on the northern part, coming out of Page, Arizona. It is a very popular tourist attraction area and waterway. But John and I were assisting to find an individual who had allegedly drowned in that river. And we put one of the department boats in the water at Lake Powell, and we traversed the San Juan River. We got to a certain point late in the evening where we ran into a debris field, and we had traveled something like 70 miles that day searching and that waterway. And so it was late in the evening, and we ran into this debris field. We pulled the boat to the shore and got out our camping equipment and decided to camp out overnight. And we were on the north side of the waterway and facing to the south. And as we had set up our cots, we had eaten. And as I was laying there, I observed an object that was coming across the sky from the west toward the east. And this object was like four times the size of what we see at nighttime with a satellite. Although this particular object was zigzagging in its pattern of travel, and really sharp zigzagging, not meandering or right. It was very sharp, right angle cuts. And as it got to about our 12 noon, it was very clear to me, and I hollered over at John. I said, "What is that?" And as we were watching this, we observed two F-16 fighters following in behind this object, and we could tell they were F-16 by their afterburners. And all of a sudden, this object from about the 12 noon position accelerated from that point to the edge of the east horizon. And it did so in about a second and a half. So it went from 12 noon to the edge of the horizon just almost instantaneously, but it kept this zigzag pattern. And it left the two F-16s pretty much standing where they were, you know, like a little child on a tricycle. This thing was gone. And to see an object move in that pattern at that rate of speed was mind-boggling, because there's nothing in our military arsenal that we have that could perform like that. There's just not. And I liken it to what some of these military pilots see with the recent, you know, observations of the Tic Tac UAPs or UFOs, and the performance and right angle turns. You know, it's similar in the way that this thing moved. It was awe-inspiring.
When you said that you found a debris field, you didn't mean like a crashed craft or something.
The debris field was in the river. They had heavy rains, and I think that contributed to this individual that had drowned in the river.
Gotcha.
And the debris field was within the river.
We're going to take our final break. We'll come back. Let's hear another one of the more harrowing experiences for our guest when we do that right here on the Paranormal 360. Hey, folks. Still looking for that perfect holiday gift? How about the gift of investigating? That's right. You can join me at the Palmer House Hotel this April. I'll be joined by Scotty the Medium, Scotty Davis, and Sarah Lemos from Ghost Town Terror and the Ghosts of Morgan City TV program. We'll be doing a full-on investigation and a weekend of different talks, presentations, and educational points on teaching you how to get in touch with your psychic side and investigate one of Minnesota's most haunted locations. You can find more information on that and where I'll be throughout the United States this year at darknessevents.com. That's darknessevents.com. We'd love to see you. Go check out the information and join us. Stanley Milford Jr., my guest, the paranormal ranger, a Navajo investigator search for the unexplained is the name of the book. And again, we have a link for that book in today's program guide. Stanley, before we leave, we have about 7 minutes left together. Tell me one or two of the more harrowing and maybe even frightening cases that you've involved yourself in.
So, one of the investigations that really had a great impact on me was an investigation where an elderly Navajo man had witnessed an object that had encircled his home on the reservation. This object was like 25 feet in diameter, and it was shooting out all kinds of beams of light down to the ground late at night, and it ended up hovering above the tree line. And on the ground, there were, soon after, there were four entities that came in and around his home, shining these beams of light from some type of handheld device, similar to a laser beam, but about 1 inch in diameter, the beam. And each entity had a different colored light. One had a blue light, one had a red light, green and yellow, and they were walking around in his front yard shining these lights as though they were looking for something. And his Rottweiler guard dog would not, throughout that night, not even come out of the doghouse while these things were around, when it normally was very aggressive and barking and biting at visitors that would come around his home. They took a great interest in the solar lamps that were around the home, and it was said that they would crowd around the solar lamps and the light would disappear and fade out, and then when they would back off from it, the light would relight and come back on, and they would do this back and forth, making the light go on and off, having a great interest in that. But this particular case had a great impact in me, with me and also Jonathan Dover. There were other cases, like I had mentioned, the haunting in Winter Rock, where one of the phenomena was the coins that would materialize and fall out of the air, and there was a lot of other phenomena.
Would you actually see any of the spirits physically? Did you ever witness that?
I did witness, in that same building at one time, a form of what is commonly seen with a cavalry soldier. The cavalry uniform from the 1800s, I did witness an individual in that dress, yeah. So
how does that impact you? I mean, do you try to communicate with the being, or do you just stand there in shock and awe?
There's a number of pieces of equipment, digital voice recorders and things that you can use, and EMF detectors, in these investigations, different types of equipment, camera systems. But, again, it goes back that for these entities and stuff, sometimes they will draw out, try to get you to respond in a response of fear and shock. Me and John would never give in to that during these investigations. I find it very interesting. As a little boy, right, I was one of these kids that would be, I might get a toy robot for Christmas, and I'd be in the bedroom trying to take it apart with a screwdriver by the end of the day, and end up probably getting in trouble. But that curiosity has always been with me as to, what these things are about. And that curiosity still carries with me to this day, to learn and to try to understand. But I do know they exist.
The Paranormal Ranger book is out and available. As a matter of fact, the New York Times pick for the top 22 nonfiction books to read this year. So check that out for yourself. We have about a minute and a half left together. Why now, Stanley? Why now share all these stories and insights? What are you hoping that the readers and listeners will take from this book?
Well, for me, I retired on Cinco de Mayo in 2023, and I got the contract to write the book 2 months later. So there wasn't really a whole lot of retirement time that occurred. but for me, this book is almost like a PSA to let the masses know, to let the world know that these things do happen for the most part. Yes, there are those people that hoax things and fabricate things and make things up but these people that are experiencing these kind of things, it is real to them. And I've witnessed these things too. I know that it does happen. And so, yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us some insights into your world, Stanley. We appreciate the conversation this evening.
You're very welcome. Glad to participate, and thank you for your audience.
My pleasure. And folks, again, the book, The Paranormal Ranger, a Navajo Investigator's Search for the Unexplained, is out and available now on Amazon. As a matter of fact, right now, as I'm looking at it, there's a 50% off discount available, dropping the price of this book to just $14.49 for the hardcover or 99 cents for the audiobook. So go take advantage of that sale right now and get it. If there are topics that you would like to hear, different stories that you may think I may not be aware of, or you'd like us to go deeper into, you can always email me, dave@paranormal6060.com. That's dave@paranormal60.com. We would love the opportunity to hear from you, share your stories, your emails, your thoughts and ideas. And if you have a guest or you are an experiencer of the supernatural and would like to share your story with us, email me, let me know, and I will do my best to bring you on in the future and share that as well. Remember, you can join me every Monday and Wednesday night live on the Paranormal 60 YouTube channel, where every Monday from 9 p.m. till 10 p.m. and Wednesday 9 p.m. till 10 or 10:30 p.m., you can join me live, where we will investigate more claims of the high strangeness of the world around us. Thank you so much for joining in and spending your time with us here. And special thanks to Jonathan Lowe, my producer, and to Stanley Milford Jr. May your week be filled with fascinating and suspenseful things. We'll talk to you again next week right here.